Lost my heart and hope to die. If I ever, ever told a lie, feelings and guilty just said, choose a bad place when you're dead. Washington, he never lied.
Hello and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, a popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi, I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
I, Sir Weirdington Esquire, most advanced of my line, shall respond to your call for a mere Weirdington.
Yes.
A fully landed gentry of an anthropomorphized jukebox, only insofar as sapiens mind.
Oh, yeah. Hi, folks. Welcome back to the pod. We're back at it again. I've tried to make like a big deal about this, but we have like a couple of episodes back, like hit the like halfway mark on this pod, so we are halfway through 1.5 million words. Just let that sink in, folks. This is a over a million and a half word book. Like something to the ring of about 2,000 some odd pages of book.
Which surely means it's all gravy. It's just a smooth downhill slide to a clean landing. There's no such thing as, I mean, look, you could argue that, like, an extremely steep cliff, coming out of the end of a very steep cliff would be half of the journey. And that is a smooth transit, all the way to the rocky shoals beneath.
So I guess we should tell people what we learned last week, though, Weird.
Oh, no. What did we... Why is this so hard every week? I just re-listened to the podcast, but actually only just enough so that I could like see how hard I had to chastise myself for accidentally calling Bangladesh Bengali, because I used the word Bengali too many times in a row and racked up a combo and couldn't stop using it when context for the noun changed. What did happen? Okay, all right. The first thing that comes to mind is that the party now has in its inventory a flayed blackjack skin.
Yes, that was the thing that happened.
Okay, it was one of the quiet episodes after the big fighting from the chapter previous to it. Oh no, they did fight a big robot?
Yeah, they spent a lot of time fighting a very big robot.
They released Discord, who is totally not basically Baphomet in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But with no titty or penis, so the worst of all worlds.
he's the PG rated Baphomet. but yeah, and basically in all ways in terms of design and characterization and acting is Q from the Star Trek Next Generation series. A nonsensical trickster who shows up every couple episodes to fuck with things.
So right, they let Q out of a tube where he's being bled to create the mutagen, basically. And he doesn't just turn the robot into bubbles or a small toy. I guess presumably from the anemia.
Yeah, basically.
Victor Freeze, no wait, that's a much better character. Sanguine is able to revive his wife and child, who are then immediately killed by a kind of very randomly inserted feeling robot. Shy. I need a dismissive nickname for this character because it makes me want to vomit every time.
I could just like start calling her by her real name.
She has a canonical real name.
Yeah, its whisper. We get it in like this chapter or the chapter afterwards or something like that. Like, I can't remember when we get told this, but yeah, her name's Whisper.
Self-insert baby. Self-insert baby makes the situation worsened by like rescuing him from being killed by the robot. Like, in like effectively like killing them herself, but with just enough like plausible deniability to like for the author to like insist that she's not accountable for it.
Mm-hmm. Which is a weird common theme with this story, isn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, then he dies maximally sad in a way that's like really frustrating. Like, it's not even cathartic because he's a monster and he should die at the height of possible sadness. Mm-hmm. By that point, we're supposed to like feel sorry for like feel some sort of sympathy or like kinship with him, in spite of like a lot of like heel heat built up over the course of several chapters. Like, we're supposed to forget about all that. We're supposed to forget about the entire families of people he made watch as he like fed them into a rock crusher.
Yeah, but it was just like JK.
Like, to the point that like his pain here should be kind of funny.
Yeah, it should be almost like comically misplaced in that, like, yeah, it's just. He's like, oh, how can I live? And no, he's crying tears of blood.
My own batard! Hoisted in such a way!
Is this what I've been doing to people? This sucks!
Oh no. This feels bad. Does everybody else feel bad when I feel like this or I do this to their families? Gosh! Oh.
I'm a monster. And then he's just, like, crushed by, like, a comically noised, like, just part of the building falling on him.
Like an actual fart sound from his gut slave.
It's just a comical bonk noise that he's dead.
Like, comical bonk noise followed up, like, short, like, pause for effect. And then, like, the blood, like, starts flowing out from under the thing that crushed it. To make it clear that, no, he didn't survive.
He's been mushed. Oh, man. Like, yeah, I've been, like, fucking just, like, I've been just astral projecting. I'm so beside myself with rage over how this is the main villain of 2.5 books. And he doesn't even get enough, like, he's over. Like, he's so pushed over by the time that he shows up, because he does all this evil shit to get all that heat, and then, like, it's just wasted. There's no pop. Like, we keep using wrestling terms a lot, but they're applicable.
It's just good writing. It's just, it's just like, I don't know what you want from me.
Yeah, it's,
If you're, like, wrestling as fake snob, like, I don't know. Get lost. You're bad at writing.
But yeah, like, the pop isn't there. Like, we get the, like... Like, there is some... Like I've said before, there's kind of something funny about Sanguine being sort of, like, comically pathetic and, like, kind of bumbling over, like... Like, he bumbled into seeming like he was a mad scientist, but, like, that's also, like, really unsatisfying when... He, like, killed a bunch of people. Like, if it was, like, a thing where, like, it looked like he killed a bunch of people, but then, like, oh no, it just turned out all, like, the Harbingers did it, and it was just, like, being credited to Sanguine or something like that. Like, it was, like, Somber didn't just halfway this and make it so that he was a war criminal and an evil monster, but also an idiot, you know? You know what I mean? Like, they're kind of contrary to each other. And it just makes for, like, a really unsatisfying scene where, like, when we finally face down this bad guy that's been hyped up for so long, he's just like, nah, I'm actually nothing, and there's a bigger thing down the road, and, like, I'm just gonna die.
I think the list of, like, whatever the fuck the sequence of events was last week, the only things of note are self-insert Chai continues to be on the loose, out there somewhere. Now alone and searching for purpose, I guess.
Yeah, basically.
The party has added to their inventory an entire flayed blackjack skin from a blackjack yes. clone, which will eventually be used to replace the skin on her face because she is currently da-dump, dump, da-dump.
Yeah, she's currently a Terminator. They also have, like, Scotch's lungs.
That's what I was going to get to. Like, two items in their inventory, a complete blackjack skin, and a new respiratory system for Scotch. Presumably they will have the good taste not to mention that, like, an entirely viable Scotch tape had to, like, an entirely viable alternate clone Scotch had to die for it.
Yeah.
And then, okay, Sanguine and his family are dead. They're completely, no longer, like, his relevance to the story has been swiftly and cleanly scrubbed.
Yes. He was killed so hard, it killed him out of the plot.
Yeah. Nothing, I'm trying to remember the exact phrasing from Asmodeus. Nothing beside remains. like his family, like no fallout consequences. This actually reminds me in Fi's Discord there was some talk about shitty writers not understand like and shitty fans, shitty nerds not understanding that like there are consequences in stories other than death. And like this is a fine example of how death can be a nullification of consequences. Like Sanguine is dead, and so is his family, and now, like, there's no more consequence to his having ever existed.
Yes.
Nothing beside remains. He's just gone.
Yeah. He's gonna have no further impact on anything that happened.
Death is an anti-consequence in this case.
In a lot of cases, yeah.
And lastly, the rando robot that came in to trash this entire like facility, also in part to erase it from existence, so it will never be relevant again. In its dying moments, it starts talking, and it'd be nice if it was doing that earlier.
To have like a character of any kind.
Yeah, so that it can foreshadow something. Like what does it say? Because it's important what it says.
Oh, it's like give me life, give me the program is what it's screaming before it's killed by a train that's exploding.
Okay.
Which would be rad in any other story.
All right, so that's done.
Yep.
What happened next? What wasn't there?
What's this chapter about?
So we open the chapter
with me falling asleep almost with this chapter because it was so fucking boring. Like a lot of times I write
this can of shitty Mexican vanilla flavored iced coffee. Let me just pour that on the microphone. I'm sure you can.
sure,
listener will.
From
the adventure of a lifetime, we create High Brew to help you navigate anything the day throws you away.
We're not sponsored, but I could definitely go for sponsoring right about now. Of some coffee right about now. But yeah, anyways, chapter 40, Recovery.
It's like ass. Not even
Welcome to our Mexican cold brew coffee review podcast, our podcast within a podcast.
Well, that was the conclusion of our first and only segment of the micro podcast. It's like, yeah, ass. It just sucks. All right. And now back to the primary.
But yeah, anyways, yeah, chapter 40 recovery with a name like that. You know this one's going to be a fucking cool down, nothing happening chapter. It's built into the name. So I wrote this, I sometimes write notes to myself about like what the chapter is going to be about just to refresh myself. So this one is just, yay, another cool down, nothing happens chapter, and also some medical drama. Yay. So this chapter follows up with a thing that happened in the previous chapter where, in a fit of identity death fear, that Gloria has been having since she's now Rainbow Dash. She decided to try and dye her hair to try, like, to de-rainbowfy herself, which doesn't work because the Killing Joke is stronger than that, and it makes it so that her hair just goes back to rainbow, regardless of what she does to it. And then in this exciting follow-up to that, our chapter is opened up with her trying to, like, whack off all her hair with a knife, because, like, well, if my hair is gone, it won't be rainbow. But of course, it just, like, rapidly grows back. So, you know, it another one of those, like, feels like it was written to appease nitpickers. No, she really is just stuck looking like Rainbow Dash, which is a fucking baffling character design decision that I don't understand why.
I managed to put it out of my mind until this exact moment.
Is it just that Rainbow, like, Glory is so boring that there's nothing you can do with her character except for make her look like a completely different character? Is that the actual reason?
You know what? I honestly can't guess.
Yeah.
It's out of my power to guess. Like, I have so much raw contempt for Sombra at this point. Like, it would be rude of me to speculate, because all of my speculations would revolve around my profoundly jaundiced view of the man, the author,
yeah,
the myth, the legend.
The mediocre. There's a lot of discussion about the concept of, like, what it means to be yourself and identity, which is trying to bring it around into a much a broader conversation related to Blackjack about how, since she's less physical meat, does that mean that she's less Blackjack now because of her cybernetics? Which is a conversation the story is wholly unequipped to converse about. It's incredibly inarticulate about it, and I just don't care. This is all just shit stolen from Cyberpunk, and I don't care. And I also know that this Glory stuff goes nowhere, because we find out later in this chapter through a conversation with somebody else that, like, oh yeah, Poison Joke just doesn't work that way. So all of this, like, hand-wringing over what it means to be me is, like, solved within this chapter. So it's an utterly pointless plot point. Like, it's getting to bizarre, like, self-parody levels where, like, the chapters can't even, like, hold a theme long enough for the entire, like, chapter. It's hilarious.
Well, let's go right linearly, and then I can feel angry and sad when we get to that point.
Yeah. But yeah, there's also an incredibly insane hot take, like, nuclear balefire hot take, of Glory blames Rainbow Dash for the Enclave existing, essentially, because in the insanity that is just a mouthpiece of the author, when the bombs first dropped, there were, like, the first bomb that hit anywhere was Cloudsdale, which was the Pegasus, like, city in Equestria, which forced, like, that killed a bunch of Pegasi, and it's what forced them into their, like, weird xenophobic, like fascist thing. They like flew to the sky because they felt like they just wanted to take care of their own. Whatever. It's only important enough to talk about in the context that Glory's nuclear hot take is that if Rainbow Dash didn't exist, the Zebras wouldn't have nuked Cloudsdale first. So in her mind, Rainbow Dash is kind of at fault for all of those deaths, which is frankly bonkers.
You know, I feel really bad because I could be making a really solid recommendation for some leftist listening right now if I could remember the dude's name or have, like, a clear idea of the speech I'm talking about. But I'm reminded of this, like, super angry left anarchist guy. He has a background as a active member of a First Nations tribe. Talking about, like, I can't even remember the name of the city. I think it was Cincinnati or something. Maybe Portland. Anyway, people in a major East Coast metropolitan city blaming leftist agitation for turning their city into a fascist hellscape, and pointing out that, yeah, no, Yeah, those darned leftists showing up on a bus one day and causing the mayor and the sheriff and every institution of power to scramble to buy several tons of military equipment and bring in hire paramilitary goons and implement all of these like years of built up authoritarian infrastructure just out of the blue. Like it was a pure response.
Yeah. It was just a reaction. They did it. Their hands were tied. They had to commit those war crimes. It's such a the problem is that like, so regardless of what the author particularly feels about this character is either a mouthpiece or I don't know why this character is like this, because Glory is presented as a kind of shitty neo-lib, but she is, because she is a calm, rational actor who is like a highly educated person on most subjects, she is innately considered to be more correct about politics just by the virtue of her like background. That's just kind of how everything works. So when you get someone like this spout this super chuddy opinion, it's hard not to try and interpret it as if it's meant to be taken seriously. If it's not, I will be fucking surprised, because Glory is universally through the course of the story presented to be like wrong in a bunch of things, but like politics is awkward. Like,
I mean, to be fair, like with the opinion that you've just told me that she's expressed in the story is the archetypal mouth breathing, overeducated, wealthy lib take. It's like the only difference between us and our enemies is. Or the an enemy is just someone whom we've failed to hear their story. Of course, never minding like Hitler. Like, yo, yes, of course, the only thing that separates us from a fascist warlord who either has or seeks to kill everyone. Is we just need to hear them out. Maybe if we sit down with them in a peaceful context and really like take the time to listen to why they think absolutely everyone that isn't basically them, a replica of themselves, should die, then there wouldn't be any need for conflict with them.
Yeah, perfect utopia. I think... Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I think I just wasted a lot of words, which could be better said. That, like the universal lib take, the libs will nine libs out of ten will always side with fascism when push comes to shove, because they're comforted by the status quo, and despite being aesthetically ugly. Claiming the aesthetics of revolution and bold change, fascism is ultimately a manifestation of if things are going to have to change if we want to keep everything the same around here.
Yes. I also think it's really telling that Glory never shuts up about how Rainbow Dash had her heart in the right place but did bad things, and apparently also led into the deaths of thousands like this, when like you could critique the fact that in the actual story Rainbow Dash ran a secret government paramilitary black team that fucking like disappeared people and essentially worked as insurgent teams to destroy zebras and their allies, and did a lot of shady off-the-book stuff. You could discuss about that and critique that, but like Sombra is ultimately fine with that as a thing, seemingly in the government, that there is just a wildly unchecked military that could just kill people with impunity. They seem to be ultimately fine with that, which is grotesque. But you know, whatever. Just food for thought. Anyways, moving along. BJ gets confronted by the goddess, which you'd think would be some consequence to her actions, where the goddess confronts her over, like, because the whole reason why she's helping her is because, like, the goddess needs biological, like, manipulation technology, right, to have children, and Chimera can help that, and BJ's like, well, we blew it up, and you'd think the goddess would be, like, angrier about that, because she's, like, universally portrayed as being kind of unstable and quick to anger and be authoritative, but she's just like, nah, whatever, because events are happening in the main story that, like, matter more at the current time.
I mean, if Lacuna is actively connected to the brain Wi-Fi, wouldn't she, in response to this information, kill everyone? Like, if she's supposed to be there, all the repressed negative feelings, like...
Well, like she, negative from the perspective of an authoritative, like, person. So, like, negative, like, compassion and, like, sadness and stuff. Not like...
blinding genocidal rage?
Yeah, that's a good thing, as far as the goddess is concerned. But, and then we also get, like, a really annoying part where, like, BJ just, like, totally owns the goddess with facts and logic, and it's just, like, really, like, unfun to read. We're like, I don't know, it's just there's a weird thing in Project Horizons where, like, I guess, like, Somber really just doesn't like the goddess as a villain, because every single time she shows up, she's constantly, like, mocked by Blackjack, and Blackjack is constantly standing up to her, even though, like, an Alicorn could just turn it into paper, like, if they wanted to, and, like, everyone knows this. And there's also a bit where she I guess, like, Blackjack has figured out the goddess's true identity, or at least she thinks she has. It's not quite this, but whatever. This is a poor interpretation of this, but she connects to Twilight Sparkle for a short amount of time within the brain Wi-Fi, where she, like, comes to her lucid senses for a hot second, which undoes a lot of stuff that happens in the original story again, so whatever. Who gives a shit at this point? We're just writing our own fan fiction. Oh man. Then we get to the part I really super don't care about, where the whole thing turns into a medical drama show for a while, because, like, they like find out, like, oh, the stasis pod that Scott got put in has been tampered with, so we don't, like, it's failing, and we need to, like, get the lungs into her really quick, and there's, like, a lot of tension about, like, sewing her back together, but, like, it just, like, Somber's prose doesn't make this interesting. It's real dull to read through. Well, like, the thing is that, like, it comes down to, like, do you care about Scotch living or not? And, like, I don't, and because I find her redundant and kind of pointless in the story. Like, she's a precocious mascot character, but, like, other than that, like, she does very little in the story, and, like, this story has already killed so many kids that I don't care anymore. Like, I'm super sensitized, I guess, to, like, the concept of, like, baby murder, I guess, in the story. It's like, oh, cool, kill another kid.
Yeah, killed so many babies up to this point. Like, what's another on the pile?
Yeah. Like, that sounds super jaded, and it totally is, but, like, that's just kind of how the story is presented. Like, there's no, like, once you've done that magic trick once before, like, it's hard to make me care. And especially, he's done it so many times and will continue to do it so many times in the story. Like, over the course of the story, outside of just the 40 foals being took off life support, like, three other children have been eviscerated in front of us. I don't care anymore. But they find out, like, oh yeah, it's been tampered with, and also, like, all the medical supplies that we had stored away for her are missing, and we don't know what's going on. And it's up to Blackjack to like, play medical detective and figure out, like, what happened to the drugs. And this is where we find out that, like, fucking the absolute Chad of 21 pulls out some fucking absolute nefarious shit, out of his ass, this time. where they find BJ finds 21 absolutely drugged out of his mind, and revealing that he has had a painkiller addiction this entire time through the course of the story, because that's just a thing that, like, apparently the males, like, develop over time in the stable, because that would just dose them up with painkillers whenever, like, they were being, like, non-compliant. So basically all of them are addicted to opiates. Hold on.
Yeah. How long has it been since he got a fix?
Two and a half chapters. Yeah, like 2.5 chapters.
Like, they've been tromping through the wasteland this entire time, and, like, most of the drugs they've found, BJ has hoovered up.
There's a backfill that he's been, like, getting painkillers on the sly throughout the course of this story.
What? Absolutely nothing about his behavior indicates a
severe opiate addiction.
Yeah. Nothing.
Yeah.
Like, there are certain behaviors that are stereotypical to a depressant junkie. And they're stereotypes for a reason, because they do things to your brain.
Yes.
And also, there have been long stretches of narrative time where he could not, but fuck you, he got a fix. Like, how, where's he been holding it?
He doesn't wear clothes most of the time.
I suppose everybody has a solid snake style inventory on them. I get, like, we can just assume that for whatever, like, why am I affected by this? Why is this getting to me? Is this the stupidest thing that's happened so far? This may be one of the stupidest things that's happened so far. This is one hell of an ass pull retcon. You son of a bitch, Somber. You piece of garbage. You dumb idiot. You useless wretch. You son of a bitch.
Like, fucking Christ. Like, yeah, I just wanted to let a weird ramble for a while. But yeah, like, Christ, the concept of, like, 21 doesn't have a fucking character. Like, he is such a, like, such a threadbare character. It's misogyny and grumpy. That's his two traits. That's all he does through the course of the story is bitch and moan. And then, like, trying to backfill that, like, he has a severe painkiller addiction, and that's part of the reason why he's been so testy, is just fucking lame. Like, it's such a bad attempt at trying to give a character a bunch of artificial character undeservedly. Like, I don't care about 21, and nothing that you do is going to make me care about 21. 21 is an unlikable piece of shit. Everything he does sucks. He's a huge drain on the narrative. He's just a shitty, boring interest.
Here's an insane idea. Like, how about instead of, like, backfilling, like, new problems for him, instead of backfilling, like, justifications for his shitty behavior, like, allow him to grow as a person, maybe? Like, make his behavior grow less shitty due to, like, exposure to the people in his life, maybe? How about that? Like, maybe this would be a good time to address the fact that his daughter is like on the verge of death.
Well, that's what this chapter's about, partly.
But instead we're taking away from it. Yeah, that's what this chapter is about. But we could take this chapter is about that. So a normal mind would say to themselves, okay, then that is our narrative focus. That is what we need to, like, talk about and address. But that's a mere mortal brain. If you have a galactic hyperconsciousness like Somber, you see instead that what we need to do is divert focus from that to talk about 21's pain instead. We need to address a man's pain right now.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like, it is weird that it's basically like, hey, your daughter is dying, and this chapter is about you, like, trying to, like, connect to her. Yeah, but what about my needs? Oh, Christ! Like, okay. So, and again, I would like to point out to the audience that the thing that I've established really, really early in the story, so like 21 is supposed to be the moral compass of this story. He is, for a lot of the early part of the story, supposed to be the character on which all moral decisions are pinned upon. And like that he's like this rancid fucking loser who like can't even be bothered to try and like connect with his only fucking family is fucking hilarious to me. Like, if to give Somber undue credit, this is a hell of a characterization if it's supposed to be that it's like a twist that the moral compass is actually the biggest piece of shit in the crew. But like, I still don't care because I hate him and I want him dead. Like, I don't want, like, the story suffers for 21's inclusion in every way. Every aspect of 21 is awful. But yeah, anyways, yeah, he's been addicted to painkillers this entire time for years. He's revealed that he's basically just been, like, waiting to die ever since Blackjack saved him from hanging himself. He was just expecting that eventually, like, the Lace were gonna get him. And that, like, all that talk has meant nothing. He's also suffering from a bunch of survivor's guilt because of 99, and it's just, like, like, even in my notes, I just basically went, fuck 21. Like, I don't give a shit, dude. Like, you have to make me care about your character's plight and suffering, and this fails to do so. Utterly, in every way. But yeah, but of course, because Blackjack is the pony messiah, manages to coax him out of his stupor, and to at least wait in the waiting room, while Scotch is getting patched up. But the thing I forgot to mention that makes this whole thing nefarious and evil is that this is all linked together because fucking 21 nicked Scotch's painkillers in a bad state, and that's what's causing all this trauma, which is if I cared about this character's strife, it would be this would be a interesting plot point in the sense that it's a sudden fall of grace. Like, oh yeah, this character has got like is having a relapse.
He's so desperate that like, but
I don't care. Like that's it.
I care deeply. Oh my god. Like, because, like, it can't, given the greater context of everything that's happening in the story, it is impossible for me to read this as merely, like, an incidental act of desperation. Like, this speaks to a deeper pathology in the character. Like presuming the author, like,
It's basically death cult mentality. Like,
no, it's murdering this child. Like it is an act of like raw resentment against this child that he's been working to abandon this entire time, who he has been like slighting and
ignoring and neglecting, essentially.
Yes. Like he has been a deadbeat dad this entire time. He's clearly been resentful of her and the failed responsibilities he has to her. She like his continued behavior to her is like a sort of perfect like he is reminded of his own ideological failings every time he looks at her and every time he continues his grotesque behavior towards her. There's like every reason to believe that like on some level, and like surely Somber has to like also be on some level aware of this, like resents this child. And so this isn't merely like I think like it there's every reason to believe, like based on the greater context of the story, like it's not that he's like hungering for a fix or that he doesn't think he could find it in a better place. It's that he wants this kid dead.
God, that is so much darker than Somber could ever like write something.
But I mean, I'm convinced that is fundamentally what he wrote. He doesn't realize it.
Oh no, of course not. I'm just talking about like interpretation versus intent, right? Like he clearly didn't write it that way because this is supposed to be a redemptive. This is supposed to be a big, powerful redemptive moment where like he finally comes to terms with like, no, I have this like single person in the world that I need to take care of because they're my daughter, like my literal flesh and blood, and I need to take care of them. So he doesn't realize the like implication that like this moment of weakness is far more murderous than he is interpreting.
Like okay? So this chapter, how does this resolve in this chapter? How does he or anybody else come to terms with this act?
It just sort of like, I don't know. I don't want to say it doesn't, but like it just sort of like it's. This is just about. Like, Blackjack obviously just forgives him immediately because 21 really can never do any wrong that isn't worth being forgiven by Blackjack, and Blackjack just forgives everybody, gives everyone a million second chances. The next little bit in the waiting room is they spend a lot of time just talking about how cool Blackjack is. Like, that's just a thing that 21 always does in these moments. He always talks about how cool and awesome and special and great Blackjack is because he can't muster the like capacity to be as capable as she is. There is almost an interesting thing said here where 21 like where Blackjack pesters him and says, "Why didn't you say anything?" And 21 responds, "Because you don't. Because you always just take it in stride. You never tell us any of your problems, and you just let it all like sit on your back. Like you don't open up to us, so why should I?" is essentially what's being said, which is again almost an interesting point. But this dude almost killed his daughter, like
it's not exactly working out for Blackjack. Like,
yeah,
she like the last time like they were in civilization, she like abused a traumatized child for like not being useful to their ends.
Yeah.
And especially in the greater context of this, like, Blackjack forgives him for something that, like, she should, like, take him out behind the building and shoot him in the back of the head for. And then he, like, heaps praise on her, like a worm tongue?
Like a sycophant? Yeah.
Yeah.
This is also
sick.
It's also gross because they're kind of hitting on each other as well during this scene. Because we got to establish good and ready for the next 30 chapters that these characters are going to end
up. Rampage, kill these people.
I wish.
Rampage, you're the hero we need. murder them both.
I can't believe this fucking book has two sequels. Oh
my god. Oh my god. Oh my god!
Then they're gonna eat me!
Fly! If you're not aware of the meme, like, go look up Trolls 2. Oh my god!
It's pretty amazing.
That's me! And including, like, the fly that is moving around on my face that I can't notice because I'm too in the scene. Okay, well, look. Okay, Somber has successfully, not in a way I think he was intending, but he sure has given fucking 21 a much stronger sense of character for me.
Yeah.
Previously, he was a non-entity in my mind. He was just annoying, and like...
Now he's evil.
My stance on him was like, man, don't tell me about your ethics ever fucking again. I thought of him as sort of an empty vessel, just like nothing to report on. Self-hating gay, profound misogynist. And now he is a, like, I'm not sure what you call it. What is the submissive variant of an abusive lover. Like what is the like abuser a, bottom? Like
I'm trying to think of the like basically the word is completely lost my brain. But yeah, it's abused through
like a bootlicking parasite. Like he's awful. Like I now have feelings about him, and those feelings are pure hatred. And that feeling is reflected on everyone else in the story because they aren't killing him
at any given moment. Yeah.
Like every moment that they don't shoot this dude in the back of the head is a condemnation of their moral character. And that, like, they're flirting in this chapter.
Yes.
In this chapter, wherein this event occurs, the yes. forgiveness is so comprehensive. The like, water under the bridge.
Passive-aggressive, that was the word I was looking for, that I couldn't think of. Like, yeah, abuse through passive aggression. That was the... Yeah. The thing I wanted to say about 21.
A passive-aggressive, abusive lover.
Why is it always the chapters where I think we have nothing to say, we end up saying the most?
It's because it's why I'm here. Like, as of the pilot episode, we established that, like, you're so deep in it that you don't see a lot of you feel on a gut level it's awful, but like since it has the haze of nostalgia and you have to read the like brain numbing prose every week, like that is why like I don't read it. that's why I need to remain like clear headed and not have my senses dulled by the broken shitty prose, and even poor paragraph formatting, so that you can explain to me what happened in this chapter, and I can like go what?
Yeah, the comedy bit routine, Rice straight man something that you just go, and then they did what? But yeah, fuck. Anyways. Man.
He's a monster.
He's a monster, and we're supposed to sympathize with him.
That's a recurring trend.
Yes. What? But usually they're villains. Like, usually they're bad guys that you're supposed to kind of, like, sympathize with. 21 is supposed to be the good guy here. Or, like, at least, like, a morally gray, like, loser.
No, he's bad.
I know he's bad. Holy, he has no redeeming traits.
Shit.
But yeah, we gotta like move a little bit closer to the end.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Um,
what happens next?
Yeah, we find that Scotch is stable, but it'll be a miracle if she makes it out through the rest of the night, because they had to like scramble to put her back together. They go to prep Blackjack for surgery so they can like equip skin onto the horse. First though, we get to have an infuriating conversation with the dealer, the skeleton horse. I forgot that we've been calling him skeleton horse.
Fuck you, skeletonhorse.os.
So, he is really shitty and contemptible for a bunch of other reasons, but basically Blackjack has a conversation with him where she's like, you know, okay, who are you? Why are you doing this? And he's like, oh, I'm just along for the ride. And also, I hate everything, and I'm a huge misanthrope and want, like... Like, he basically insists that, like... He's tired of, like, idealism, more or less, and he wants people to stop believing in idealism because it's just basically fanciful lies. Because he's sick of people believing that, like, the waste can be fixed and, like, we can, stop the apocalypse from happening. He's convinced that the universe is just doomed. And basically just a bunch of fucking boring ass misanthropy. That he has no right to talk about anybody for any reason about anything. We don't get who he is yet. He just keeps saying that he's nobody special. But the thing I can insist that is nonsensical about the dealer is that he spends so much time talking as a moral authority because he's cosplaying as death, basically, for a huge time, and Blackjack doesn't know that. And acts like he has the moral authority, but he simply doesn't. He has no cleaner hooves than any other member of the fucking story, but simply acts like it. So all this shit rings as hollow as possible. It's completely meaningless.
I mean, I have to agree that it is very specifically boring misanthropy, because I am consumed with apocalyptic misanthropy. But my problem is, like, that I'm broken on the wheel of not knowing how to inspire more hope. Meanwhile, this asshole wants to annihilate hope.
You keep seeing that black old train tunnel and not seeing anything at the light of the end. Where this guy is just like, nah, there's nothing. Like, it's a specific blame on... It's another political misstep where it's placing the blame of the apocalypse on people who believed in things and not the war that killed everyone.
And not the opposite. Not everybody. Not all the, like... nihilistic pieces of shit who and had hope and a vision of the future, as opposed to what is the historical truth, which is no, it's the fault of the nihilists who could not give a shit beyond their own immediate personal gain. Like that's the ultimate truth of like every fascist, every like the Koch brothers, every monster that like leads to destruction of their own world to a greater or lesser scale is that these people don't see a future and don't care. Like that's a recurring trend in a lot of like that's part of why like one of the core features of fascism is a yearning to go back to a glorious mythic golden age. Because they can't conceive of a future. They don't see a future. They have absolutely no hope. And so they want to return. They want to go back in time. The only future they see is a regression to some more glorious past.
Also, spoiler warning, assholes, like Somber, the whole plot of the original story was specifically like criticizing assholes who believe in prelapsarianism, you dumb morons. Like, fuck, how can you get a fucking book's theme wrong so consistently? Like, I guess Fight Club exists,
this is like we've stated before, like this story is an indictment, is a specific attempt at refutation of the original story.
The original story
was like, yeah, prelapsarians are morons. This is Somber going, no!
They're actually really cool and rad, and you just don't want to listen to them because you don't want to know. You're worried that they
don't
might
see
be
the
right.
Truth. You have an unrealistic view on the world.
Yeah. You just need to grow up and go back to the way things used to be.
When I was a kid and things were simple and easy.
Yeah. Like, yeah, this is
babies. It's what I like. Like
this book is so much just
like the like if you break down the psychology of prelapsarianism is that they want to go back to a time when they like yes, they want to go back to the way things used to be in the better times when they were children and were too dumb to notice the complexities of all the things that are wrong.
All the bad things happening to them. But yeah, this book is just radical centrism in a nutshell. It's fucking amazing.
Better things aren't possible.
Possible, yeah! Anyways, dealers' arguments are pointless and I don't care anymore. I'm going to probably never really talk about the dealer that much ever again.
I don't know why you're calling... Who's the dealer?
Sorry, Skeleton Horse. It's literally just because it's in my notes and I keep reading my notes over and it says dealer because I wrote it this time because it said dealer.
I think it's an increasing rule of mine. Never respect the name of the dumbest characters.
Yes, but I'm going to increasingly probably talk less and less about Skeleton Horse over the course of the story because before he reveals himself to be what he actually is, it's just like just more empty nihilism that I just don't care for.
Nihilist Clippy.
Yeah.
No, he's been downgraded from Skeleton Horse to Nihilist Clippy.
He's cloppy.
Skeleton Horse I was on board with as like a ghost cursed to haunt Blackjack, but now that we know he's just a fucking like dipshit Clippy attached to Blackjack's the OS of yeah or oh yeah no just yeah he's not even attached to like the larger OS of the interface of her computer. It's he's just a Clippy attached to the Maltese.exe that has infected the rest of her rig like a virus.
Well, she just has to deal with it.
We can talk about it another time. Put an indefinite podcast long pin in. I think we need to at some point have a long talk about the Maltese.exe is weird because like everything that it could touch is already like it seems like it would be enough to just have the like mere bloodline filtration system. So the Maltese.exe, because everything is already bloodlocked, to the
it's
people
irrelevant.
Who can use the Maltese.exe anyway, the only purpose for the Maltese.exe is to ensure that only one of the six of them at any given time has access to what it specifically can unlock.
So the thing it sells itself as a concept is that it's meant for when, because since there's Equestrian Command Spell Code 1101. It's the Order 66 concept of like it's a hard lock thing to exist so that if the chain of command is killed off, the government could theoretically still operate, which still doesn't make any sense because you still would have to be like blood related for that to matter at all. So it's utterly pointless unless you're just a bloodline essentialist and assume that like the only people that would be even possible to actually like reinstall an equestrian government would just simply be people that were related to the already existing ministry mayors, which I mean.
Yeah, I mean, again, like that. Since everything is already filtered by like this bloodline detector, that means that another program that's a key would therefore only filter out from those people. So since it's already filtered by these specific bloodlines, then if this is the only instance of this program, then the program could only exist to filter out all but one of those people.
Yes. And I don't understand who made it. Like, it's something that we're eventually going to find out it's probably Golden Blood, but I don't understand why he would make it, because as far as I understand, he can't use it. As far as I know, he's incapable of using his own skeleton key, which
he would like just lock it to himself, like lock it to like that he would like you. I could see like in another maybe better story that like you.
Okay. We definitely have to put a pin in this and talk. Like we will come back to this at the end of the book review, I guess, to talk about this program some more. So see us again in a couple of chapters for like more on this subject.
Look forward to it there. But
because they're going into surgery and they don't have any painkillers to work through, guess what that means? It's memory orb time. We actually haven't had a memory orb in a few chapters, which is surprising, but it's because they've been replaced by like ghost visions and like Blackjack just seeing dumb bullshit. So, but yeah, we get an actual honest to goodness OG memory orb, which means we get the special memory orb ooze and get the I don't know. I just always assume they make like a theremin noise whenever you access them. Well, especially because they kind of like give off a feeling of like very like the sort of more ray gun gothic elements of the Fallout sort of design aesthetic, in my mind, of being this like cheap magic crystal ball that lets you see into other people's memories.
Vaseline lens transition.
And it's just all the memories are all in black and white, and they've got that like Vaseline filter just so you know it's in a memory. That's how I've always pictured them. But
so what happens in Orb? what are the big takeaways from our new
Orb? Oh, this memory orb is so pointless. It's hilarious. It's a bunch of conversation that I think definitely sounds smart to Somber, but is really meaningless to anyone besides, like, people that have read all the way through this. But basically, it's two smart brain boys talking about politics. It's Golden Blood and his replacement, because by this point he's been stepped down as the director of the OIA and has been replaced by Director Horse, who is a dude that's come up in a couple of other memory orbs. And I have to remind people, because it's becoming an increasing thing I have to do now. Mr. Horse runs the Robronco company, which makes a bunch of the robotics in the story. He's a competitor to a bunch of other characters in the story.
Is it spelled with two S's or something in the same way that
what horse?
Yeah, in the same way that man is spelled with two N's.
It's just horse.
Mr.
Horse. Yep. Who is based off a character in New Vegas which was Robert House, who in himself was kind of a sort of pastiche of, like, eccentric billionaires, like a bunch of them mushed together, basically. Who served as a sort
of
villain.
Wouldn't it be Barn? God damn it.
So Horace is insufferable because he's just capitalism man, but you're supposed to dislike him, as opposed to Golden Blood, who is also capitalism man, but you're supposed to think he's cool because he's calm and collected, while Horace is, like, crass it's the myth that there's two kinds of capitalists, the bad capitalists.
President
and the capitalists.
Donald Horse.
Yes. He's Walt Disney Horse. He's the guy who invented the fucking spruce plane and, like, became a germaphobe and you know, like, hid in his, like, hotel room and, like, wore, like, Kleenex boxes on his feet because he was, like, terrified of, like, getting germs from clothes. He's all those characters mushed together.
I know who you're talking about, and presumably somebody else does. But
he's a bunch of anachronistic things mushed together. But he's
Howard
basically
Hughes,
like
yes.
Howard Hughes. He's 1920s capitalism man. He's got a slicked back haircut and a mustache. He's really gross about robots.
Charles Lindbergh.
He's one of those
fucking monsters that, like, at one point actually attempted a literal coup against the United States government, but fucked up because they chose an anti-capitalist general. apparently kept his political opinions to himself up until a bunch of fucking robber barons approached him and said, "We would like you to become the king of America."
And he's like, "No, thanks. I actually believe in democracy, so get fucked." I don't like Horace, like, at all, because he's very, like, transparent in that he's supposed to be, like, very obviously a bad guy that'll probably show up in the future, but, like, and he's also based off of a much better character in New Vegas that I don't know why he's so weird like this, and he's supposed to be a contrast to Golden Blood, who Golden Blood is, since he's the Aristos, is, like, naturally born to be a, like, leader and rich person and overall good guy. Horace is, like, an invader who is, like, a self-made new money man.
A new rich.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
This is the most fucking, like, this is the most, like, liberal story ever. Where the bad guy is just a guy who has money, but for the wrong reasons.
These grotesque self-made men, a bunch of grifters who haven't been educated on the proper way to handle themselves around money and power.
My perpetual complaint about the story, in which, like, the story is really bad about, like, in a universe like MLP, where, like, 70% of the population is women and all positions of government are women, Somber has a weird problem with putting a bunch of men in positions of significant power, you know, for no reason, Why would you do that? That would be super weird to do for no reason. It makes no sense. Why would the patriarchy be a thing? But it's really annoying and I hate it. And it's really blatant. It's just like, oh, cool. Do you just diminish the roles of women in stories for functionally no reason besides, like, I don't know, spite is the best I can come up with off the top of my head. But yeah, we're almost done the chapter, because they come into that memory orb with, like, literally nothing gained. This is all set up for later things that just don't matter. BJ has brand new skin, making that whole Terminator plot point irrelevant again, since she will basically never get face injured ever again.
Never spend a quiet moment in a chapter looking in a mirror and, like, making, like, a variety of expressions and having neurotic thoughts about the iron monster just beneath.
Well, she'll certainly think things like that, but, like, it won't have, like, a physical metaphor for it to go along with it for a long time. Cool. BJ checks the EC-1101 because it's been updated to, like, the next area they need to go on the quest, which is Hightower, which is the local prison that they gotta go to, which takes several chapters for them to get there and isn't very exciting.
That's okay. It's been a while. It's been a long while since we've brought up that,
you know, the plot.
Dumb quest. Dumb. Especially now that they have Clippy. Especially now they have Nihilus Clippy to just ask.
Yeah, there is, like, a really dumb line where basically BJ goes, like, why don't you just tell me everything? And he basically just goes, I'm not gonna. And she asks why, and he's basically like, well, I don't want to play the game anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. And like, that's what leads into the conversation about nihilism. So, like, that's basically...
Hey, Nihilus Clippy, you dumb piece of shit. You know how angry you are every time I go adventuring? That's the inevitable result of you keeping your dumb idiot mouth shut. So,
yeah, remember when I kept telling? I said this chapters before where, like, Skeleton Horse has no right to talk down to Blackjack. He doesn't. Like, he does this shit all the time in the back half of the story.
I want to see all these characters die, except Rampage, who I have adopted and completely, like, rewritten into a different character in my head.
Yeah, just like I've done with Blackjack.
Who I am, like, forcibly, like, imposing from my distance, not having to actually read the text.
Yeah. Whenever Rampage isn't on screen, you can just picture him doing something cool. Like since she's not in this chapter at all, you can just imagine that she's just, like, cartwheeling into fools and, like, killing a whole bunch of Reapers in the background.
You know, just drinking, hanging out, like, not being, like, a rapist or a, like, whatever. Like, I don't... There aren't words for how bad a person P21 is.
It's kind of amazing.
There aren't... They're like, bitch is the best I can come up with. He's a bitch.
There aren't words that aren't also derogatory to other people. Like,
yeah.
But anyway. We got a little bit of chapter left. Yeah, they got to go to High Terror Prison. Takes them a million years to get to and isn't very exciting. Yeah, Lacuna confirms that Glory is in fact not turning into Rainbow Dash, because as I've mentioned before, theories are just, like, accurate in this story.
Yeah.
So when a character says, I think that this is true, that means it's true. So, you know, utterly pointless character change to make a Rainbow Dash. Except for, like, obviously the Enclave not liking her, but we won't see that come up for fucking chapters and chapters. But yeah, and the final scene is 21 having a heartfelt moment where he, like, is having his come to Jesus moment over Scotch's bed as she wakes up and like, you know, they acknowledges that she's his daughter, and it's all is happy, and everyone's crying, and it's meant to be this big powerful moment where I'm just farting, making fart noises the whole time. with my mouth. But yeah, so that's the end of the chapter. A fucking...
So, has he like, confessed that he's her father?
Yes.
Okay.
He acknowledged his fatherhood towards her, and is in theory going to become a better person in general, I guess. This is more or less the end of his character arc.
Like, at this point, like, I think it might be immoral to let him.
Sorry, it might be a what?
It might be immoral to let him. It might be immoral to, like, have him involved in this child's life at this point. Like, I think he's crossed a bridge, and, like, from which, like, no, you are not a sound guy. Like, we have a gift of a magi scenario here. Like,
we're gonna give her to Rampage. We can trust Rampage more than we can trust you right now.
And, like, her baby murderer is her middle name. At any moment, she will cross the line and be overwhelmed with her compulsion to crush this child to death. And it's better to have her, like, her as this child's guardian than you, you piece of shit.
The story is incredible. But, yeah, is there anything better we can be reading, Weird?
I took a moment during the podcast to look it up. Ward Churchill, Ward Leroy Churchill, is your profoundly angry anarchist uncle. He is real mad at you for not having overturned the state by now. He's real mad. And the internet is also real mad at him. Like, there's like, just a shitload of, like... to be fair, he is an asshole, but, like, listening to him speak, like, you can hear the hurt in him. Yeah. Over, like... Oh, man, it's been 70 years of just pure shit and pure, like, capitulation. I hate all of you. Mm-hmm. You're going to be doing so much better. I'm so embarrassed for you. I was introduced to him by listening to, like, a big speech he did, I think, on Labor Day. Which was basically heckling the audience for forgetting what Labor Day means. and the quote the half-remembered quote I brought up earlier about, like, yeah, man... It was the anarchist. It was anarchist rabble rousers and agitators that turned the area into a fucking nightmare police state. Never mind that. Like, maybe, just maybe, if people raising their voices in protest causes this level of crackdown, you are always in a brutal authoritarian.
Yeah, this was a lot worse than you're making it out to be. Kind of moment.
Well, like, it's a pure thing of, like, libs think that complaining about a problem is the same or worse, or is the same as creating the problem. You bring it into existence by acknowledging it. Anyway, yeah, a lot of people, like, he was a professor of ethnic studies, particularly regards to Native Americans, the historical treatment of political dissenters of Native Americans by the United States government. And, like, looking up his name, you get at least one, like, these fake Cherokees are destroying dialogue. His photo, he has, like, the jawline of like a First Nations dude on a cigarette tin.
Weird thing to look. I look like a cliche.
Anyway, so Ward Churchill, look up your deeply angry anarchist granduncle. Listen to him yell at you for not having cast off your chains yet. that's the best I got. Do you have anything?
off the top of the bean, not super much.
I asked because I thought you had something that you had in your back pocket last week.
I was just gonna say that like I'm getting back into doing readings. I will report back on my findings on one that was recommended to me like a couple of days ago called Red 36, which sounds promising. I need to get caught up on a friend's other story. So that's kind of where I am right now. Otherwise, yeah, you can find us at Thou Art Fi on Twitter or at Weirdington E.
Thou Art Fi's Twitter is distinctly not safe for work, and mine is, I don't know, just generally safe for work. I don't know how I should go about properly curating it. You can also email me directly with your comments and thoughts, praise and hate, at the email address weirdingtonesq@google.com. I haven't checked for fear of disappointment. If we have any more stars or reviews on iTunes, but I trust you all to have to have something for me to see this time next Wednesday. Say, if you have a iTunes account of any kind, it's the easiest thing in the world. Just click the store page and put stars on there.
But yeah, otherwise, you can just recommend it to your friends, tell people you know, donate to Weirdington's Ko-Fi. We will eventually have a Patreon up. I keep saying this every week, but we're just lazy and have other... I think one of the problems with this podcast has been that both of us have tons of other projects that we work on. This isn't the only thing. This is not the only thing I do. It's just easy to get sidetracked into not doing things very, very easily.
My time
easily.
Is split between projects and just being sick.
sick and broken.
21 is worse than I could have ever imagined and should not be left alone around a child, an impressionable mind. And there's still so much more to go. Fine. I think this was all a terrible mistake.